I'd like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, and first item of business would be to okay the minutes. Do I have a motion? Representative Banyan?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes.
Minutes, March 15th. Any questions, corrections, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the minutes are approved. First item on our agenda today is House File 2846. Representative Kahn, front and center. And that's I'll move House File 2846. And House File 2846 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Kahn, welcome to the committee.
Chairman, it's a pleasure to be here.
Do you want to grab the microphone and name it towards you a little bit? There we go. Thank you.
Nobody usually says I'm too soft, but anyway, it's a pleasure to be here, and what this bill does is increase the membership of the Office of Higher Education, the OHE Student Advisory Council, by adding the chair of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, an organization of student representatives from all five campuses of the University of Minnesota. This advisory council now has one person representing the U of M Student Senate, the Minnesota State University Students Association, the Minnesota Association of Private College Students, and the Minnesota Career College Association, and two persons representing the Minnesota State College Student Association. So the purpose of this advisory council is to bring issues to the attention of the OHE, make recommendations to the OHE, and improve student appointments to OHE task forces and advisory groups. And I have two people here with me today who will introduce themselves from the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. So, whichever
order. Okay, who's first?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Tasted. I'm the chairman for the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, and I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. I'm here today with one of our legislative advocates, who's also a student at the Twin Cities campus, to generally give the background of what our organization is and make the case for why we feel that we're worthy of inclusion on this committee, and generally what it is that we provide in terms of value to things like the Office of Higher Education. I'd like to start by briefly giving a background on the development of this organization and what's come about in the past year, and then Julia will follow up by giving a few specifics in terms of justifying our role in this committee. The Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition formed as a result of uniting the respective advocacy arms of the student associations across all five campuses, all six student associations, including graduate students, within the University of Minnesota system. This happened over the course of this past year, starting in February, and has seen rapid growth and development over the course of the fall and in this legislative session in the spring. The point of this group is ultimately to serve the purpose of increasing communication, furthering transparency, and striving towards increasing student engagement in the legislative process. What our role and mission is to is to serve as a means to engage students on both ends of the advocacy spectrum, in the sense that we reach out to students and individual constituencies across the entire spectrum at the University of Minnesota, and also work to develop issues and advocate on behalf of those by taking action both in the administration at the university and in the legislature. So we hold a very key position in terms of identifying issues like things that would be happening at the Office of Higher Education, and being able to effectively speak on behalf of students and providing a novel a niche, that a perspective that can be seen in this process. So effectively, this is an organization that's now looked at past implementations of advocacy arms of the at the university, and worked to create a greater sense of stability and longevity in what we would be doing in our efforts. So we feel that the stability and the endorsement of the administration as the official advocacy arm of students provides a legitimacy in what we're doing this year now and going forward in the future. So I think I'd like to pass it over to Julia to follow up on this issue specifically.
Mr. Chairman, welcome. Members of the committee, my name is Julia Schlesing, and I am also a member of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. What we have here is essentially comparing apples to oranges, because the MSLC may represent the same constituency, but we do represent different perspectives. We reach out to students in a fundamentally different way. We exist solely to interact with, engage with, and speak for the student body. The MSLC is unique to the Minsky system and the Senate in this way. There has been some opposition, but as Representative Kahn was saying to me, the more students have more in common than they do not. And so the more students on this Student Advisory Council, the more that we can get done, the more student perspectives we can offer, the more students we can help. As this Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, this is why we exist, to represent the students. And because we speak directly with the students, we offer a different student perspective than the Student Senate does. So with that, just would like to say thank you, and we would like to ask the support of this committee for passing this legislation, and we will stand for questions.
Members, any questions of these testifiers? Well, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I wasn't listening at the very beginning. So who exactly is a part of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition exists of six arms. These are the respective lobbying organizations. For instance, on the Twin Cities campus, the subsidiary of the MSLC is the Twin Cities Advocacy Corps. That consists of members, individuals, students that are trained in advocacy and trained to work on these issues. So these are individuals that are tasked to work specifically on these issues, and they work at the extension of the representative democracy of the student associations. So we carry a level of authority that exists in our founding charter that collectively represents each of those advocacy arms. In some ways, it is a coalition and contains a very diverse structure in that it united very different lobbying arms and very different organizations, but collectively represents one mission, one voice, and one position at the legislature, and that's done through my role as the chairman. The involvement includes specifically on an internal level individuals that are tasked as student legislative advocates, but involvement can expand beyond that to work with student groups on campus. For instance, we reach out to student groups in an effort to try and engage legislators and line them up with legislators that have correlative interests and things that they're doing, and also provide training in our own ways to enable students to better advocate on behalf of themselves. So these necessarily aren't members of our organization, but we actively work with them, and we make an effort to include them and enlighten them in the sense of how they can be engaged. And we feel that that within itself provides a novel perspective in terms of considering something like this Student Advisory Committee in how we can advise and serve the role of that committee through our mission and through our objectives that we have.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you. So the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition is University of Minnesota students. Is that correct?
This is correct, yeah.
Thank you. And did you say that these are University of Minnesota students located in the Twin Cities?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this includes students in the Twin Cities campus, but our governing body, the Central Committee of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, it consists of members from all five campuses and consists of membership both not only I gave the Twin Cities Advocacy Corps as an example because that's the group that I work most closely with, but there's equivalent organizations on the Duluth campus, the Morris campus, within the graduates Student Association. So the membership of the organization spans the entire system.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
So you're asking for an add-on person, somebody who chairs this, to be a kind of a second University of Minnesota then representative. So I think one of the issues might be that that might put the group out of balance. I understand the idea that, you know, the students are wanting to have a stronger voice and wherever they can get students from and to be able to do that. But I'm just would like to hear a response to the fact that you do have a University of Minnesota student student senate person who's representing the students. So if you could just reiterate what you might have said about why you feel that it should be a second person.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is a very valid question. We feel that the nature of this committee is through advisory and through an advisory context, and the nature of this is to include as many perspectives as possible, not strictly just represent a specific core constituency or set of constituencies. We acknowledge the fact that there's a discrete nature to the Minsky system, and they're fundamentally different in their composition. But we also believe that what the Student Senate provides is unique and important to the committee, but it's also different and distinct from what the MSLC can now provide. We've essentially carved a new niche for this organization and what can be done for representing the student voice and representing issues on the legislative level. And we feel that those two opinions coming from Senate, or those perspectives coming from Senate and the perspective coming from the MSLC are both distinct and valuable and should be represented on this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there were, you have mentioned a couple of times about Minsky being unique and maybe not having a similar thing. If they do have or would create something, then you're open to also Minsky having a second person on this committee?
Representative Kahn?
Chairman, I certainly would be, but Minsky already has three people on the committee, if you look at the makeup of the committee. The Minsky already has three. The state chair of the Minnesota State, the president of the Minnesota State College, the listed on 1.9 through 1.11. Minsky does it, has three people on. But if Minsky were to form a group that's kind of analogous to this one, I would certainly be interested in pursuing that. I've had some courses in organizational efficiency and so forth, and the number of people that you should have on board. This is well below the number where it starts to get, unwieldy. We set up advisory committees that have very, very many more people on it. And this is kind of a good working group size, and I think the one person adds a lot, and if someone wanted, if there was a similar organization at Minsky, I think, I would certainly be amenable to bringing that bill forward.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, what we are doing here, we are not necessarily trying to disrupt the balance. The message we have gotten from the Office of Higher Education has been the more the merrier. And we think that the membership of the Student Advisory Council needs to expand to better represent different student perspectives, not necessarily what you represent or who you represent, but what you represent needs to be expanded on.
Representative Codd.
And Mr. Chairman, what's unique about this group is that they're totally focused on legislative interaction, much more than any of the other ones are. And I think it's a good example for everyone.
Okay, I know we'll have somebody from the Minsky students speak, so I'll just wait for that.
Yeah, okay. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Kahn, for bringing the bill to us. I think this is an issue worthy of discussion. I wonder if either of the testifiers could delineate for me whether the Minnesota Student Senate is a student senate of all five campuses or of one, or how it functions. I guess I simply don't know the answer to that.
I can answer that question. Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, the Student Senate at the University of Minnesota represents all five campuses collectively. You could say it's essentially a policy-making body. They don't exactly strive to take action, but in conjunction with the Faculty Senate and policy that comes from the Board of Regents, this is essentially what holds weight in terms of policymaking at the university. You could say that the Senate is the most comprehensive in terms of representation at the University of Minnesota, but it's not the most comprehensive in terms of action or the purview of subjects that they evaluate, such as things going on at the legislature.
Representative Daniel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, then. Student senators, of course, are elected. That's kind of how they get their title. By what process do you choose the board of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition?
Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, the The structure of our organization, like I said, is relatively disjointed in the sense that we've retained the unique nature of each of the arms at each campus. The one consistency that we have for the sake of representing the organization collectively is that the leader of each of those arms and an additional representative, depending on the needs and the nature of what the campus would like to represent themselves on that committee, make up that central committee. So there's 12 voting members, and then additional members such as a representative from Student Senate, a representative from the representatives to the Board of Regents. We also have an administrative advisor who holds an ex officio role on the committee for the sake of interacting and communicating with the administration. So this central committee consists of two members from each campus, one of those being individuals like myself, who are the director of that campus advocacy program. So we essentially see this committee not only as a governing body, but also as a focal point of communication and a fabric that can be laid across the university to make sure action is effectively taken.
Sir Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Nornes. And just as a comment, the nature of an advisory committee is to provide advice from a diversity of views as wide as you can get. And I agree with Representative Kahn. One of the reasons I wanted to sign on to your bill, Representative Kahn, was to see that this was different. And I think what we're hearing here is, in fact, that despite the fact that this is another organization covering five campuses, just as the Student Senate does, it's selected in a different way. It has different kinds of folks. These folks might not be the kinds of folks that run for or win seats on a Student Senate and ended up being here, but it's a group that I think has a good voice, and I'll give my my thanks to OHE for saying, as you suggest, the more the merrier, because that diversity of viewpoint is valuable. Thank you.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I had most of my questions answered by the line of questioning that Representative Poppe was going through. A couple of concerns. Simply, I'm not understanding how or why, I guess, the representative from the Student Senate could not continue to represent the needs or the aspirations of your group. I'm assuming that you could also hold a position on the Senate besides, you know, an advisory. Same question, you know, in terms of Minsky, although there isn't one now, I think if I were them with this open invitation that I would have an advisory council now for the three different parts of Minsky. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of hoping that, you know, as more seats become available at the table, that you're all ready to add another three or four or five people. So I guess that's my question.
Well,
we want to respond, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking in terms of one, which seemed kind of, since the objection was there was one more from the university, although it makes it two with three from the Minsky system. No, I was thinking of one more from the Minsky system. Okay. I have very small relationship with university politics at this level. My husband was once elected to the faculty senate with the complaint being done that he ran on my name recognition, but he didn't stay there very long. He's a mathematician, not a politician, and he couldn't take it very long. So, but that was the faculty, not the students.
Representative Benson?
I think he's probably a pretty smart man, Representative Kahn. I just come at it just from the fact that you look at Minsky, and there are three separate kind of things going on there, the technical colleges, the two-year colleges, and the four-year university. So it seems to me that an advisory council that focuses just on the needs of the two-year college, be it Embry-Riddle or whoever, and then those of the universities, certainly not out of the question. So just being mindful of, you know, when we talk about seats at the table, you know, that shouldn't come as a surprise.
Representative Depke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to ask this question to either Julie Schlesing, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Julia Schlesing.
Okay, or Jeff Ferner. Either one of you. Do the student regents serve the same term as the adult regents at the University of Minnesota?
Yes.
So that's for a period of 6 years, right? And how long has the current student regent served?
The Mr. Chairman, Representative, the current student, Maureen Ramirez, or the current regent who was elected as an enrolled student, will be up for re-election this next term.
Okay. And are they, how long were they a student at serving as that capacity at the University of Minnesota over the past 6 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Depke, I cannot say officially, but I cannot say exactly, but I know that they were in their last term at the point of selection.
So effectively, they've served, on the high side, they've served 5 years not being a student.
Mr. Deputy, Representative Deputy, that's true.
Well, I can understand why you feel disenfranchised. I would think that one of the things that you would want to explore is terms for student regents. And before you start adding student regents, to serve 5 years to represent students, not being a student, I think is not doing what you need. So that's my advice.
Representative Demke, just to clarify.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
That term apparently is constitutional. So I'm not, as far as the student regent or all the regents for that matter.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. You might want to consider, however, when you select, maybe the students can bring forward an amendment for students that they need to serve at least a minimum of X number of years on the board in order to be qualified to become a student regent. Because I can understand why you want to add more, but just adding more isn't going to solve your problem, because you might be adding more people that are going to serve for less than a year as a student regent.
I think we're on two different bills.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
We're not talking about the Board of Regents at this time.
Oh, all right, fine. I apologize.
It's just a student organization. So.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. But it's still my question is out there. I think you should think about it. Thank you very much. Yes.
And Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, under the theory that the more the merrier is a positive and not a negative, I'm going to offer a oral amendment to line 1.8. And I just ran it by Ms. Novak. Members, what I would suggest we do is at the end of line 1.8, where it reads, the members of SAC shall include, I would add the words, but not be limited to, and then allow OHE to decide. So I would add the words, but not be limited to. That would be my amendment, Mr. Chair. Then if I'll explain it after we get a chance to all have it. Mm-hmm. So that's the oral amendment I would move.
Everyone get that? Representative Kahn, do you have a comment?
Why don't we let Representative Morrow speak?
If I might speak then to the amendment. I didn't know if you wanted to vote on the amendment, then have me speak or speak to us
first.
Members, what I'm thinking here is that OHE has a better idea of what it needs on its Student Advisory Council than the legislature. This is a holdover from when there was a board that ran OHE. What I'm thinking is OHE might say we want a re-entering student on our advisory council. It might say we want members to have regional diversity. That we might want graduate students. And I think it's better for OHE to make the determination of who's on its board than for us sitting around the table to determine the board. So for that reason, I would offer this amendment. Therefore, we don't have to start parsing. Is it three or four or two? Is it another private college council member, et cetera?
Well, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good idea. You're not deleting the new language that we're adding. So we're adding one, and then we're giving OHE the ability to add others. I think that. Okay. I mean, these are the guys who brought the bill to me, so they should speak to it.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment? Mr. Tassel, do you have a comment?
I guess I would just say that amendment would be friendly.
Okay. All right. Let's make it official. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. The amendment is adopted. I didn't hit that very hard. There we go. Okay, back to the bill. Morrow, you're finished with your questions? I believe we might have one or two other testifiers that would like to come down at this time.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Who's first? And please go ahead and identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dipper, president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. Today, I'm speaking to you on behalf of the student leaders of the Student Advisory Council of the Office of Higher Education, a couple who are here today, to share a concern about this bill, which will alter the student membership of the SAC, and now with the amendment, which will take the decision-making away from the students of the council and give it to the Office of Higher Education. Under current statute, one student from each sector in higher education is represented on the council. There's a student represented from the community colleges, state colleges, technical colleges, private nonprofits, private career, and University of Minnesota. As Representative Pawlowski will know, as his name was on the originating bill of this committee, this council, you know, back then there was two different student organizations. There was the community and technical college students, and we have since combined to be more effective as an organization, but there still exists those very distinct and important qualities of the community and technical college students. I won't begin to understand what Darlene, as a technical college student, her experience as a nurse, as me, it's just a liberal arts student. So that's explains the difference there. The Student Advisory Council provides opportunity for feedback and recommendations to the Office of Higher Education from these distinct sectors. This legislation will result in giving another vote to the University of Minnesota students through its legislative arm, the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. And I've actually spoken with the chair of the Student Senate of the University of Minnesota, who is actually shares our concerns and said himself that this bill is unfair and that it gives them, he says it gives us, an additional vote. And so I'd be happy to provide his contact information. He's a student at the University of Minnesota Morris and wasn't able to make it today. I've circulated a letter which outlines our concerns about this bill in further detail and provides possible solutions. The Student Advisory Council welcomes the involvement of all students. It's the meetings are public and anyone is able to attend. We encourage the future attendance of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition and are supportive of their efforts to further establish themselves. We hope to protect the current parity of student representation while allowing the MSLC the opportunity to build a working relationship with the Office of Higher Education. Thank you, and I will stand for any questions or allow another speaker.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Amanda Bardonner, State Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association and our representation on the Student Advisory Council. The Minnesota State University Student Association would like to address some of our concerns with you today on House File 2046, which changes the student membership of the Student Advisory Council. As Jeff had pointed out earlier, the structure of the committee, so I'll skip that part for you. MSUSA is excited to have the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition more actively engaged in advocacy efforts. Having more students involved in this process will enhance the educational opportunities for all students across the state. However, we have a few concerns with the legislation. First, adding a second member from the University of Minnesota system gives them an extra vote on contentious issues. This would convey an unbalanced perspective from student organizations to OHE. Secondly, the legislation would be codifying an organization that was formed only months ago and has not established itself as a clear voice for students at the University of Minnesota. Currently, the student representative from the University of Minnesota is the chair of their Student Senate. MSLC would easily work with the Student Senate to have the correct person, in their view, appointed to serve on the SAC committee, eliminating the need for this legislation. Lastly, meetings of the Student Advisory Council are open, and we warmly welcome the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition's attendance and participation. However, we believe that the current structure of voting members provides equal representation across all sectors of higher education, as was intended. We feel that representation from the University of Minnesota on SAC is best handled internally with either SAC or with the University of Minnesota itself. If legislation needs to be passed to address the concerns of the MSLC, MSUSA would support adding an or after Student Senate Chair of the University of Minnesota and inserting MSLC as an alternative option to serve on the SAC. I'll now stand for any questions.
One more testifier. Want to go ahead and identify, or just here for questions?
I'm Darlene Tyreek. I'm actually the current chair of the Student Advisory Council, and so I'm just here in support of the SAC as a whole, coming to testify.
All right. Thank you for being here. Members, questions of the testifiers. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To any of the testifiers, this is an advisory council, and yet you're describing voting on issues. Could you describe for us what types of votes you take?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, as mentioned, the council provides feedback on policy directions of the Office of Higher Education. For instance, currently there are work groups around ways to restructure the Pell Grant, opportunities for that, as it is very intertwined with the state grant, things like that. So although it is an advisory group, the essential principle exists of equality, and we figure that this is something that's best handled within us, better with in-house than legislated.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ditmer, as I understand it, there are three, if I include all of Minsky together, there are three of you on SAC now. Mm-hmm. If I don't think about the 4 years, I think of the other two, and I would agree with you that community colleges, technical colleges have different interests and have different perspectives. Why would the additional perspective that we would get from this student legislative coalition not be another different perspective than the ones that are already there? I'm just trying to figure out what if there's an overlap, that's a good argument. I just want to know what the overlap is.
Yep. Chair Nornis, Representative Banyan, I think a concern of ours is that this is also setting a precedent. And so other student organizations throughout the sectors, say MPIRG, for example, could come to this, or if legislation is changed, to OHE and say, well, we represent student interests. We should be allowed to share our opinion about student interests. Well, they're not directly tied to any of the sectors. They're just an interest group for students. And so it's a different situation. The MSLC is actually already representing the same students by having a university representation. So if they were representing a different body of students, it would be different, but they're representing the same students ultimately.
Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, I want to be very clear. We absolutely welcome their involvement and their voice at the table, but when it comes down to a vote, we would like to see the University of Minnesota have the same representation that all other student sectors have.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, are you laying this over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
So we can have a you could have a discussion as the chair with everybody concerned about this after today.
Right.
Because there are some legitimate points and counterpoints to this. So I was just wondering what we were doing.
Yeah, that's the plan. So any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn, do you have any final comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if I was the only person here. Maybe Representative Rukavina was here also, Representative Pulaski, when Minsky was formed. And it was specifically thought that Minsky, as one organization, would kind of be a counterbalance to the university. And I would point out, as we've said, and it was thought not the separate entities of Minsky. Each one would be. It was thought that bringing them together would give them, you know, an additional voice at the more powerful voice at the legislature. So I specifically want to say what we started. I do think Representative Morrow's amendment improved it, which allows the, you know, I don't think, one of the questions I guess is when has there been a contentious issue of this group that they had a divided vote on? And I would remember that we have three members from Minsky right now. And this would just put two members from the University of Minnesota, and if there seemed with very different perspectives, and if there seemed to be some imbalance, then the Morrow Amendment, I think, fixes that up.
So well, thank you, and House File 2846 will be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you much. All right, next House File 2880, Representative Mazeroff. go ahead and move your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe this bill is presented for hearing and will be laid over for possible inclusion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Does that require a motion, Mr. Chair?
That would be the motion.
Okay. Yeah. And I so move.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, currently under law, for any students that, at a state higher education institution, any student born after 1956 who did not graduate from a Minnesota high school in 1997 or later must provide a statement of immunization. And there are certain exclusions to that requirement. Excluded are students that are enrolled in extension or correspondence classes. Those are somewhat outdated terms currently in higher education. So what this bill proposes to do is to add language that would also exclude those students who are taking online classes, hybrid classes that blend online with face-to-face classes, and evening or weekend adult accelerated programs. And essentially, the interpretation that we have on this is that the adult accelerated programs is largely what was intended at one time or known as extension classes. And so the idea is to bring the language up to date with current teaching practices. And I have with me as a witness Paul Ives, who is the Director of Admissions at Bethel University for the College of Adult and Professional Studies and the Graduate School.
Mr. Ives, you want to go ahead and again officially identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Ives. I am the Director of Admissions for Bethel University College of Adult Professional Studies and Graduate School.
Do you have some testimony to
give us? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, as I mentioned, I'm Paul Ives, Director of Admissions, Bethel University College of Adult Professional Studies and Graduate School. Each year we admit over 900 new students into our accelerated evening bachelor degree completion and graduate programs. Now, the students attending our programs are non-traditional students. They're older. They usually work full-time during the day and attend classes either one night a week, online, or a combination of online and maybe some occasional face-to-face meetings. A lot of them attend courses at what could be considered our satellite locations. There are many students who never even step foot on our main campus until they come to get their diploma on graduation. I took over as Director of Admissions about a year and a half ago, and I conducted an intense review of our admissions process and how well my enrollment counselors can deliver customer service to these working adults. They're all going back to school to improve their life, improve their place in the workforce. And one of the things I saw was we were really hampered down by what we saw as an immunization requirement. Each of my enrollment counselors spends about an hour a week not so much working with while they want to work with students to talk about their goals and their dreams, they end up spending about an hour to an hour and a half a week just instructing students on how to track down their immunization form and properly fill out this form to meet the state requirements. Students often ask us, why am I filling this out? I'm only coming to school one night a week. I'm 40 years old. I'm not living on campus. Who am I, who am I affecting? They're in very small class sizes, too. In terms of burden on operations support, our operations staff constantly has to spend time monitoring this document to make sure students filled it out properly. If they didn't fill it out, we have to put a hold on their account, and we can't register them for the next semester until they track it down. Our IT staff has spent numerous hours trying to develop an electronic solution for this, but if you know anything about supply chain management, you have a burden right here, and all you're doing is shifting it to another department. So currently it's my department's burden, so that's how I ended up being here. So I just believe overall this law needs updated.
the document creates an undue burden on adult students who are just trying to go back and improve their position in the workforce. It creates an additional burden on the administrative and operations staff. My hope, again, is just that we can take another look at this and update it to address students who are taking online hybrid adult accelerated programs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Ives. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm looking at this, I certainly understand and appreciate the need to update the language. And I think correspondence courses, online courses, you know, that's fine. I could even perhaps be persuaded that adult only or evening adult accelerated programs can be exempted, but I think we have opened the door big time on the hybrid classes that that blend online classes with face-to-face classes, because that's happening in many, many colleges on a day-to-day basis with every age student. And once you put this in here, this is going to open the door for the entire college and university system in saying, well, we have blended classrooms, therefore the kids don't need to be immunized. And we do know there have been some cases of adolescents with, I think, measles or something a few years ago that was kind of running rampant through our colleges, and that's why these laws are in place. So I guess I could be persuaded to support the rest of it. I would strongly recommend, and I guess I'll offer an oral amendment, to strike hybrid classes that blend online classes with face-to-face, unless you want to insert some sort of over 40 or some sort of strange definition of adult, which I don't think we want to get into, because I think that's a debate we don't want to have. So I guess I'm going to suggest we strike line starting with the word hybrid on 2.2 through the comma on 2.3.
Representative Mazeroff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, thank you for that suggestion. I think we're all trying to reach the same result, and actually we've had conversations with the Minnesota Department of Health, and we've actually traded some language, and since this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion, we're going to be working on the language. Our minds have met on what it is we're trying to exclude here, because the original exclusion, obviously, we're not trying to avoid what the statute requires. It's really to update the language so that the current exclusions meet today's teaching methods and still accomplish what was originally intended. And I think between us and the Minnesota Department of Health, we're of a single mind on that. So it's really working on the language that might accomplish that, if that could answer your
Representative Northern.
Well, I actually made a motion, and I would hope that you could accept the amendment to strike that language, and if there's something you can find better to put back in, you certainly can do that, but I don't think it's wise to move this out of our committee with that language in it, because it opens it up to almost every university and every class for every age student, and I don't think that's wise at this time.
Do you want to respond?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative, right. Just for clarification, too, we're talking adult students who are taking hybrid online classes, not traditional daytime students. So I guess that's the point, you know, we're trying to focus. Adult students just happen to be taking online and hybrid classes. I mean, you know, this isn't, that's what I feel this is trying to address.
Well,
Representative Norton.
Sure. If the
well, and I don't disagree that that's what you're okay. trying to address. I'm afraid this language goes beyond that, which is why I was trying to just say, let's for now take that out and keep it to, extension, correspondence, and online classes and adult evening, and not add that unless you want to add adult hybrid classes, you know.
Okay. Maybe, yeah. Kathy? Section C, can you take a look at that?
Mr. Chair, the definition of student beginning online 1.22 is defined in two ways, and then the exclusions are applied to the definition, and student means a person who is born after 1956, so that could be literally anybody born after 1956, and then it's limited by who did not graduate from a Minnesota high school in 1997 or later. So before we get to the exclusions, we have people who don't graduate from a Minnesota high school born after 1956. That could be a number of people enrolled in institutions. Then the exclusions apply with the type of class that they're taking. So I believe Representative Norton is correct that the definition of student is broader than adults.
Representative Mazzaroff.
And Mr. Chair, I understand Representative Norton's amendment to still be consistent with what we're trying to accomplish, so we'll accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Everyone, Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we just got to it. My concern was we do the same thing, little college that I do, but I would have to say that due to economics, occasionally we'll blend. So I don't know if you probably don't do a cohort model. That was kind of 10 years ago now.
We still do.
You do? Okay. All right. Well, sorry about that. You're a great program. But in cohort models, you wouldn't ever blend non-traditional with traditional
Correct.
Students. But given that hybrid, I didn't know if you possibly could do that one with traditional students.
Representative Mazzaroff.
This would make it clear anyway. So that was.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm accepting the amendment with the idea that we will continue to work with the Department of Health on getting language that we're getting to the crux of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Okay. We officially need to vote on the amendment, I understand. So, Representative Papa, do you have
I'll
something
wait.
To say first? Okay. If there's no further questions, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, Representative Mazzaroff, have you talked to like OHE or MNSCU or the university on this too, and are they okay with it?
Minnesota Private Colleges Council is okay with it. The University of Minnesota is okay with it. And then, as I've mentioned, we've talked to the Minnesota Department of Health. Not beyond that yet.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
The whole MNSCU system, Mr. Maswell? The
MNSCU system, I don't know yet.
And I see some in the audience. Can we just ask them if they got an opinion one way or the other?
Seems to be nodding yes.
Yes, they've been talked to, or yes, you're okay.
We'll get an interpretation on the nod.
Yes, I need it. I would understood that not in Croatian, but not in English.
Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Lopez with the MNSCU System Office. We support the intent of the bill. We feel that it would reduce the administrative burden on the colleges and universities, and certainly with the proposed amendment would limit the scope of the changes to those students who would not be in regular daytime classes involving a range of age of students. So it would secure the health of students.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you. Mr. Lopez, I have a question. I'm frankly a bit surprised that you said that MNSCU would not have a problem with this. I see a great concern for practical application at the local colleges and universities because I work at a local college and we have a number of students that take online classes but also are in class. So one of the words that you've eliminated, Representative Mazzaroff, is the word only. And I think if you're going to continue to do this, you need that word. Because, we're getting to the point where 25 to 50% of our students are taking online classes while they're at the college taking classes. So if your attempt is to say, It's the remote students, the distance learning students, those that don't actually darken the doors of the college, that's different than what you have now by removing that word only. So just a caution on that. And then for Mr. Lopez, with regards to practical application, as this currently reads, I'm thinking, again, I'm not the registrar at my college, but I'm thinking that's going to be kind of a headache to determine who should have it when you're doing a mass registration of students and some of the students need it, some don't. How is that actually going to work?
Mr. Lopez.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, it's my understanding that we now have codes that denote the method of presentation of a course, so that we can distinguish from a daytime course that's offered in a lecture format as opposed to an online course or some other kinds of courses. And so it's my understanding that it could be done in that way.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, and ongoing, a student who starts out as an online student but then switches over, are they going to need to have the immunization form? Are they granted the okay for, they're on out? I mean, another practical application question.
Mr. Lopez.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Poppe, that's something that we will have to think about, we will be working on that if this becomes legislation. Thank you.
Can I have just one more? Yeah. And this is probably Representative Masrell. You know, as a college counselor, as somebody who works with students, I've often wondered, why do we have to do this sheet of paper? I fully understand the admissions. I used to do that work. So you have somebody signing this sheet of paper, and it just seems like it's an additional burdensome kind of thing. So, working with the Department of Health might come to a point where we could actually get to a point where, okay, it should be so rare that a student would have to sign a form. But I don't think we're there yet, and I'm just a bit concerned about how this reads. I know you're updating language, but the numbers of students, and again, I'm just talking about practical application at a local college, how this is going to work, and it might create, just in my reading of it, it seems like it would cause some issues. So that's my question. Comments.
Members, do you need a repeat of the amendment? We need to vote on it. Otherwise, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that's necessary. We've talked out the purpose of this, and discussions will continue.
Okay, House File 2880 then will be held over for possible inclusion as amended. And Representative Erdahl. We need a motion. Representative Detmer, do you want to make the motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2025 be recommended to pass and be referred to K-12 Finance.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank
welcome
you.
Welcome to our committee, and you don't even look like you're tired yet.
Funny, I woke up tired.
Did you? We have a delightful group here that would like to hear about your bill. So,
well, thank you. What 2025 does is it clarifies that the PSEO encompasses non-sectarian academic and career and technical education courses. It strikes the prohibitions against colleges and universities advertising to enroll secondary students in PSEO courses offered by those institutions. It encourages secondary and post-secondary institutions to enter into academic and career and technical education joint partnerships with local and regional businesses and other entrepreneurs to help students pursue both academic and career and technical education, leading to an industry credential and successful transition to post-secondary career and college education. And it also establishes a career and technical education advisory task force to recommend to the legislature how to integrate career and technical education into K-12 curriculum and instruction. The world is changing. Education must adapt. We need to model ourselves after the best in the world, our country, and our state.
Representative Erdahl,
yes.
You have an amendment. Do you want to move that right away? Or
Mr. Chairman, I have decided not to do the amendment.
Okay.
And I'll speak to that as well.
That's no problem.
Vocational career education has changed. We are not meeting needs. The governor had a job summit recently, and many businesses highlighted the need for vocational career jobs, such as welders and others. Again, we could look at models like the Anoka STEP program. The purpose of this task force has also been created is to bring stakeholders together to find answers and how to develop dual credit courses, to institute the STEP program maybe on a statewide basis, to see how it would work, looking at the master's degrees. How can we encourage more teachers to get master's degrees in their content area? In looking at these issues, I have had a lot of ideas and basically decided that more people needed to have more ideas to make these work, and that's the purpose of the task force. I'm very serious about trying to see that that does accomplish some good things. Regarding the amendment that I did have, and in some fashion I think we'll be doing it again the next stop, it deals with advertising and disseminating information, and do we need to find a way to structure it a little bit more than just completely removing the stipulation. So I need a little more time for a little more discussion, talking to some research people about the impact of this amendment, but we'll be looking to find ways to structure the advertising a little bit. So,
Representative Dipke?
That's the bill and the amendment that I'm not doing.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
I think my question was to the amendment. So you're saying you're not doing the amendment?
No.
No. So, okay. All right, good. Because I was going to ask you a question on that. All right.
Well, I will say one more thing, Mr. Chairman.
Representative,
there might be some confusion. There's a Senate bill that's also out there, which, frankly, has some significant differences from this House bill. One of them is the 9th and 10th grade provision that is not in this bill, not in the House bill.
Okay, we have some questions. Representative Poppy, I'm not sure who was first, but you can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just Representative Erdahl, I'm just going to ask, what problem are you trying to solve with this bill?
Representative Erdahl.
Several. First of all, many of our high schools, from the time that I was in high school, and you know, you're much younger than me, so then maybe a little bit different when you were in high school, but there was a lot more emphasis in career vocational education. I think that with funding constraints or whatever over the years, we have started to go away from vocational career education in our high schools. We have our post-secondary institutions that do have more, and I'm looking for ways to partner them, to work with, like I mentioned, the STEP program in Anoka and the dual credits that they do there, the concurrent credits that they have there. And so that's one. In a larger sense, I cited the Governor's Job Summit and the fact that apparently Minnesota isn't doing a real good job right now in producing the numbers of vocationally trained students, vocationally trained people that are needed by our businesses. So that's the problem that we are trying to solve.
Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I work at a college. We do this. So I guess I'm trying to figure out why this bill is needed, because we have students who come to our college as PSEO students. We've previously done college in the schools that are more technical training. We allow for dual credit. You know, a high school student does earn credit for a career or technical field that they may be going into. There are multiple options for students. We have PSEO, college in the schools. We have what's called the TORCH program. We have a career academy. We have a number of varieties within a PSEO. So, again, I'm just a bit confused, I guess, why we need this if it is happening, and maybe it just doesn't happen in other parts of the state. And I'm fortunate that within in southern Minnesota, I know RCTC does it, Riverland does it, that some of our colleges do that. So again, I just I guess I'm just curious about that, how this came to be.
Mr.
Erdahl?
Representative Poppy. Poppy? I said Hoppy. I meant Poppy. Representative Poppy, you know, I'm glad that you're doing an excellent job in your institution. I don't know that every institution is doing that good a job in the state of Minnesota, and the problem remains that there is a shortage. I'm looking for ways to expand the numbers of people that involve themselves in career vocational institutions, and the PSEO option, I think, can be further explored and made more available to more people. If we have more people involved, we have more people getting vocational training.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the bill, Representative Erdahl. I believe we do need to emphasize our technical training far more. I know there are many, many jobs that go unfilled because we don't have people qualified in those areas in order to meet the demand. As it moves forward, you have my complete support with the House bill. I would only caution that once it moves off the floor and goes to conference, that we take a hard look at not including 9th and 10th graders, because I would have some serious reservations about continued support. But I thank you for the bill as written, and I think it's a great step forward.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl. And I kind of had a similar question that Representative Poppy asked you, because currently, I have to tell you, you know, we have 18 high schools, 14 different school districts enrolled in an Applied Learning Initiative program, which I think is doing exactly what you're trying to do here. So I don't think there's anything statutorily that prohibits you from doing it now, but I do share your concern that technical education, because of what's happened perhaps with cuts and everything else, has been put to the side. And on our technical colleges even, which are very few of them left, Mr. Chair, you know, and Mr. Valu has been with me on many tours when he was in the minority, and we saw that the first, you know, in a lot of places the first programs to be just catapulted, I guess, are the technical programs because of the expense, you know, set up, whether it's automotive or whatever. So I share your concerns, but I don't think your bill, I don't think currently there's anything that would stop your school district and technical college from doing something like this, because we've got our high school students with the help of college advisors teaching welding and hydraulics in the high school and vice versa, and they're getting credits for it. So I share your concern about technical education. I just don't know why under current law it can't be done.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina. Well, first of all, there is a prohibition in state law about telling students that they that this is available to them. The financial implications. We can't. The state can't, or the institutions can't contact students and parents and tell them that there are financial implications. That there are other advantages to them to go into PSEO. I mean, that's one thing right there that's a change.
Well,
Representative Rukavina,
I don't see that happening, but you know, Representative Erdahl, again, this is a good idea, and I think you could enhance the education system in Minnesota by using some legacy funding maybe to enhance this whole process. And it would be meet the constitutional requirements.
No need to respond to that, but we'll go to the next testifier, Representative Atkins. Not testifier, questioner.
Well, I
either
sometimes,
way.
Yeah, sometimes I actually testify in the form of a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erdahl, I just had, and it's shifting gears, but under lines 2.10 and 2.11, you talk about may not advertise, otherwise recruit or solicit. It appears that that's where your amendment that you chose not to offer was aimed at. And I'm just curious, as it stands, the draft that you have before us, if it passes, would give community and technical colleges and other post-secondary institutions unlimited authority to spend whatever they want to on advertising and soliciting of 11th and 12th graders to go to college? Or am I reading too much into that?
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Atkins, I think you may be reading too much into it, but I'm not sure, and that's why I withdrew the amendment. We're going to have some conversations with folks about this. We're going to talk to research, and I don't want, I want limitations on what's being done.
Okay, thank you, Representative Erdahl, and Mr. Chair. I would share your misgivings. Then I'd be very hesitant to even vote this bill out of committee until that language is buttoned up, because I think you could very easily read it by virtue of your deleting the portion under line 2.10 and 2.11 that it gives unfettered authority to colleges to spend whatever they want to advertise for high school kids. That's not a vote that I'm comfortable taking, and I'm curious if your amendment at least wouldn't be an improvement, and maybe you could continue to improvement in further committees or additional committees, but that would be my where I'd really take issue with it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
What the Representative Atkins, the portion that is agreed to is subdivision 7. It's the 1.2, the 1.14, deleting section 2 and section 6 are the ones that are creating some consternation right now and need further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Okay, Representative Rocamina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Adrians, can you help us understand this fiscal note? Because I'm wondering, are there savings projected? It's kind of I've never seen a fiscal note with this much detail.
We make money.
And so I'm trying to understand, is it the interpretation of whoever did this huge fiscal note with all kinds of lines in it, that they're projecting that the high schools are going to save this kind of money with an enrollment? Who's saving money here on this fiscal note? Can you help me with that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukovina, I am not an expert in education, but my understanding of the fiscal note is the initial cost of $54,000 is for the task force, and then the savings comes off of, because the formula, it's a per pupil formula, and so the schools would be losing revenue for pupils, because you would no longer be counting them as full pupils. You'd be counting them as half pupils if they're spending half the time in the school district and half the time in technical. So I look at this as a loss to the school revenue.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if someone else here is here who is more of an expert in that.
Mr.
So it is a savings.
Representative
Rukovina. Thank you, Emily, because that's what I was trying to understand here. And so what it is, it's a savings to the state and a loss to local school districts of about $2.6 million a year then, and probably growing as it expands.
I don't think
that's the way it is. Okay. No, I didn't really follow that. Like I said, this is quite intensive.
But as you read that, Representative Benson, did you have a question?
I did.
You still do?
Are we?
Mr. Chair, okay, to that point, isn't that the way it's set up now? That if students take advanced courses off campus, I need some clarification on that same point.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rookaby,
and you are correct to a certain point, but I think the allowing of advertising here, as Representative Atkins, clearly explained, is a total new concept, and that's what I'm trying to understand the fiscal note, if that's what they're basing it on for the new costs, that, or are they basing it on that we're opening up more technical college programs and therefore you're going to enroll more students and cost $2.6 million a year? Is it the advertising? Is it the courses? I don't really track the whole fiscal note.
Representative Morrow, to this point, or...
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is a partial response, because if I read this as correctly, this is a savings to the state because of the appropriation that would go to the K-12 school, but I don't see where the funding that goes to the college or university is factored in. And so it's confusing that way.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative.
Well, Martin. I would say the same thing. Having served on the school board, you get the money, and you get the money for the student, and you give it to the college. And while there's a little, we've worked it out in our district so that it costs a little bit less to go to college than it did in the classroom, and they have a way now to do remediation with that money because the kids aren't qualifying to get into college once they're done. So I'm not understanding the gain on the fiscal note either, because while the schools are going to lose money, the colleges are going to gain it, and the state's paying for it either way. So I would like more clarification on this too, please.
Representative Morrill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually, I think it had been somewhere in the line to ask Representative Verdahl the same thing that Representative Atkins was talking about at line 2.10, 2.11. And I understand that the schools can advertise now. They just can't advertise the financial benefit. If you look at the fiscal note, I'm not going to look at the numbers, but on the fiscal note, page 2, Representative Verdahl, it says additional costs due to the repeal of the prohibition for PSEO from advertising or soliciting participation should be minimal, as PSEO is a well-known program. So here's the concern I have as a former school board chair. We had a delicate and positive relationship with our local colleges and universities because there was concern about poaching kids from the high school, diminishing kids' activity, extracurricular activities, participation in sports, and so on. So there was concern that we tried to be sensitive to, both on the school board and as an employee of the college, that we not start, I think the word might be, poaching students. Which is not to say that students shouldn't have information, and I agree with that, but I just don't know that this is a problem that you're fixing by deleting the language at 2.10, 2.11. Is it, as the fiscal note says, it's already a popular program that will have a minimal increase. So I wonder whether you might be causing more problems, especially in college towns that have a relationship with their schools, than you're solving by removing 2.10, 2.11.
Representative Erdahl.
Were you on the amendment yet? Is that where you were?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm just on your 2.10, 2.11, where you delete the reference to advertising on financial grounds. So I'm just trying to pick up on Representative Atkins' point. I'm imagining College X coming in and saying, you know, save $10,000, come to our college. Again, I'm mixed on this, and part of me says families and students should have that. But part of me also says this might actually have a negative effect on PSEO and PSEO relationships and joint agreements between colleges and K-12 schools, if it's starting to seem that they're starting to pull kids out of the schools.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morrill, and members, I have been working with the School Board Association on this. Been working with Education Minnesota, with the Secondary Principals Association. We are working away. As I said, we do have the Subdivision 7 on the amendment that is agreed to. It's the other parts that are a little more sticky right now, but I am working with people, and I think we can. We're going to come up with something that's I think we can. We're going to come up with something that's satisfactory.
Representative Banyan, thank you for waiting.
No problem. Thank you. It was a good discussion. I was glad to step aside to let it reach some kind of conclusion, maybe inconclusive, I don't know.
We're done?
No, you can sit down, sir. Representative Erdahl, I want to echo first what Representative Benson said a little while ago before we started to talk about this, that should we start heading down this road, and this bill should get off the floor into conference. I would be very concerned if this became opened up to 9th and 10th graders. Very, very, very concerned. And the reason for that may apply to why I actually like the idea of doing this deletion at 2.10 and 2.11 that you've been talking about, which is I think that language has had a chilling effect on our ability to actually tell students what kinds of classes they're getting into. Now, I teach at a public institution, and I teach a course that is relatively popular with PSEO students. So I frequently, when I teach my 90-some seat Principles of Macroeconomics course, I frequently have a half dozen or so PSEO students enrolled. They don't know what they're getting into. And Representative Poppy, It may be advising at the high school. It's part of the problem, I think, is we're not able to do maybe the kind of outreach and advising we'd like to do at the college level or at the university level. I think that's an issue for us. And I think if we're going to go ahead and do this fix and change this language, if you're going to deal with the financial questions that many of these folks have been talking about for the last 10 minutes, we ought to also deal with our ability to let students know that they're entering courses that perhaps they won't have success in. There's nothing sadder in my experience teaching a class of first-year students than having the student come up to me and say, I'm a high school junior, I've got a 4.0, and I'm getting a C- in principles of macro, and I don't know why. And I have to have that. That's a tough conversation to have with them. And it's not fun. Part of me wants to tell them, well, you decided to step up from double A to the big league, so guess what? The fastballs are faster here. But part of me also wants to say to them, who told you should take this class? By what was the process by which you made that decision? And I can work with them one-on-one. I can provide that kind of information. But also, it's a class with 90 students in it. And if I ended up with 85 PSEO students, I got to tell you, I only have 24 hours in a day like you. And I don't know that I could do that. So I guess my question is, will this deletion that you've got in the bill at 2.10 and 2.11 help us get information to students about the appropriate kinds of courses they could take in which they could be successful, and then manage perhaps to shorten their classes? And I will say this, by the way, as someone whose daughter is one of those 2,216 non-public 11th and 12th grade students who are participating in PSEO right now.
Representative Berto.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Banyan, I think that deleting that would help, even if we just did, again, the agreed-to portion of the amendment that allows the college institutions to, in packets distributed within the school, provide information. Also, counselors. In statute now, counselors are supposed to be dealing with PSEO students. Now, there's a problem there. I recognize that we are last per capita in the nation with the numbers of counselors that we have. But still, there are ways of doing that. And, I do sympathize with the college instructors having to tell people that maybe they shouldn't be in that course. Brings back to mind my college philosophy professor, who said several times to me, Mr. Erdahl, your logic just doesn't follow. I don't know what he meant, but...
I understood.
Representative Erdahl, do you have anyone else who wants to testify today on behalf or against your bill?
There are folks that can if they wish.
Okay. All right, we have a few more questions coming from first Representative Depke. I think you're first. We can keep our questions as brief and answers the same. I do have an appointment at 2:15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. Representative Erdahl, I'm kind of confused because didn't you say at the beginning of the meeting that you were striking the language on 9th and 10th grade students? But I don't see that in the bill.
Yes.
On page 1, line 1.17 through 1.20, it still says that a 9th a 10th grade pupil enrolled in a district or an American Indian controlled tribe contract or grant eligible for aid may apply to enroll in non-sectarian academic and career technical courses offered under this subdivision. So it does still apply to 9th and 10th graders.
Representative Erdahl.
Am I missing something on that? Or
it's available after all 9th, 11th.
I know, but it's still available. So that's I understand it's available. Yeah. That's my question. I don't.
Can you clarify that, Representative Erdahl, or someone?
Well, the intent is to not have 9th and 10th grade pupils enrolled. Oh, then it says, actually, it's present law. I'm sorry, that's present law. It all this section does, Representative AP, is specify academic and career and technical courses. I mean, that's the way the law is now.
Thank you. That's it. But I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention because 9th and 10th grade pupils can. Permissive for those two after others in the 11th and 12th grade have applied for the course.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ducky, yes, you have interpreted correctly. It is after 11th and 12th grade students have taken up the spots, basically. Under current law, they would be eligible.
See, Representative Westrom has a constituent who is 14 years old, will graduate this spring from the community college at Fergus Falls, just for your information. So, Representative Rukavina, are you next?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, if I am. And Representative Erdahl, where is the Minnesota School Board Association on this bill, and where is the Minsky system on it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, they could speak for themselves. Minsky, I believe, is at least neutral. They're not in opposition. And the School Board Association is on their way.
Okay.
Oops, you can go over here.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we have worked very closely with Representative Erdahl on this bill. And we've talked since fall about this bill, about trying to find some common ground on this. And we believe that the task force piece is an approach that, because not everybody's an expert on this process, it would be a best way to perhaps advance the process for current tech ed and meet the demands of employers. The issue that we have concerns about are the advertising pieces that you guys have notified. And we just at this point we've had discussions with those who support the current language, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be any flexibility on that piece. And so we are concerned about that piece, and I think Representative Morrow talked about the delicate balance that exists in college towns about students who are post-secondary institutions who may encourage, and then under current law, school districts are required to share information with high school students. Let's not deny that. I mean, that is a fact that's in statute. It requires us to do it. It requires us to do it for 8th through 11th graders. And we're not shucking that responsibility. But to say to higher ed institutions that you can just carte blanche, that doesn't put any parameters on the advertising piece, that they can submit emails to families, to children, and this isn't about denying information. We are required to do it, and we do it. Now they may share with stories that it doesn't happen in a few cases. We should be called out on that. We absolutely should be held accountable, and if we're not doing a good job, then we should have a discussion with those boards or those counselors. But I think the other issue that raises some concern is the issue of funding for counselors. I mean, we've asked for more flexibility at the local level, but when we're asking counselors to do more and more with more PSEO students running into the program, then their workload is just going to increase dramatically. And so I think it's something that needs to be discussed, and I'm willing to work with Representative Erdahl. He's been a good author on this, and we'll certainly talk with him as this thing moves to the next committee. But we certainly do have concerns about the unlimited authority to advertise.
Representative, who wanted to speak?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Poppy is on the list.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm still following up on it.
Oh,
Mr.
Okay.
Chairman, could Mr. Schoenman finish up with one comment?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Go ahead.
And Mr. Chair, and I think on the amendment, I think, still allows for, at least, and I know this amendment hasn't been moved, but the amendment still allows for the institutions to work with the higher ed institutions to include the materials that would describe the educational and financial benefits of advancing. And let's not be foolish here, because I think most kids, I mean, word of mouth is the best advertising in this business. And when other families share with other families that say, hey, the benefits of post-secondary institution are, one, it does provide good quality education, and two, by the way, you get two credits, for you get your high school credit and dual credit, and the state's going to pay for it, that's going to, to me, that's going to reel the students in. So we think the compromise in the amendment is something that we could live with. We know others aren't going to live with that, but to have the unlimited, unfettered access to advertising concerns us.
So, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, thank you again, Representative Riddle. So you've got the School Board Association very nervous about the bill, and can I just hear from Minsky if they're lukewarm, why they're lukewarm and not, you know, kind of hot on this idea, so to speak? Because at least they're getting more students. So what is their concern of the Minsky system? Maybe we can all get our arms around this, baby.
Welcome. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Leslie Mercer. I'm Associate Vice Chancellor at the Minnesota State College and Universities. Representative Rukavina, to your question, we are basically neutral on this bill. We don't think that we don't have the concerns that we've had with the Senate version of this bill. We worked with Representative Erdahl, and we feel that both the bill the way it is, and if you should decide to amend it to include the issue about advertising, I don't think we have a concern with that either. I would say that our colleges don't have extravagant advertising budgets, and I don't believe that they would aggressively advertise, but if you have a concern about that and you want to make sure that that concern is met, we don't have any problem with that as well.
Okay. Representative.
Mr. Chair, and quickly.
Yeah, quick.
It doesn't sound, though, Ms. Mercer, like you're very enthusiastic about this at all, and I'm just puzzled. Maybe
Chair, Representative Rukavina, you don't know her that well. That was very enthusiastic.
Okay, I'll buy
Representative
that.
Atkins. Representative
perhaps,
Atkins.
Perhaps I could add one thing. I think we are, and I am, even though I'm not Scandinavian, maybe I'm not as enthusiastic as I should be. But
no, they would show no signs of emotion.
Right. But we think that the task force is a really good idea, and we share the concerns of many legislators and educators and others about career and technical education and the role that it needs to play, and the fact that some students, many students learn in different ways, and that is a very valid path. And so we think that the idea of taking another look at that and seeing what we can do collectively is a really, really good idea. And I should have said that to begin with, so I apologize.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time and with the chief author's hoped-for support, I think the one piece of this bill that's really causing consternation is Section 2. I don't know about adding all of the language in your amendment, because it sounds like adding the new Subdivision 7 that's been represented in your amendment. That may be somewhat controversial as well, but at least I think if we simply were to move to delete Section 2, which is the part that would allow the unfettered, unlimited advertising, that might help the bill, and that's the piece that is of most. The other thing I suppose we could do is move to lay the bill over and have it some issues worked out, Representative Erdahl, and then try it again. But we're hearing from both sides, I think, about the advertising, and there's some real, these are public dollars that would be used to advertise for other public dollars to be spent to pay public dollars. I ask that as a question. Representative Erdahl, would you be comfortable with the deletion of Section 2? If so, then I'll move it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, first of all, we're running into some time constraints here on getting this wrapped up. The Senate position is quite a bit different. And for the purposes of moving this along today, if you wanted to strike the section but add Subdivision 7, that there really isn't I mean, I think if you get the school boards up here again, they would tell you they will be fine with that.
Mr. Chair, I'll take Representative Riverdahl at his word. I'd move all of the amendments, the 2025A6 amendment.
Representative Riverdahl, you're okay?
Yes.
Okay. Members are okay? Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just one question, and that is there's a piece on there that hasn't been discussed on line 1.14. References page 4, delete section 6. Representative Riverdahl, we just simply haven't talked about that, but is that...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, what I want you to move is 1.5 to 1.11.
Subdivision 7.
On the amendment.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Riverdahl. I don't think that that gets at the... If it was line 1.1 through 1.11, is that... That's what we've been talking about, is getting rid of the advertising concern and then adding your dissemination of information of lines 1.5 through 1.11.
Do the whole thing. You could move the whole amendment.
So we're not talking the A6?
I'm just agreeing with you now.
Words.
We're now moving the A6 amendment. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
As offered by Representative Atkins. Am I hearing that? Discussion? Questions? Riverdahl? Okay?
Kind of.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment, A6 amendment then is adopted. We do have a couple more testifiers we need to get up to the table here if we can before we run completely out of time. Is that okay?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have my omnibus bill up in my committee after this. So
okay.
We don't want to go over.
Mr. Nathan? they still want to testify? Or somebody? Okay. Go ahead and identify yourself.
Members, Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'll be very quick on the amendment that you just adopted. You heard from the school boards and you heard from Minsky. The point of the change in Representative Erdahl's bill, and he's been fabulous to work with, the point was to allow public post-secondary institutions to communicate directly to parents about the benefits of PSEO. It was to talk to parents. And while you heard from the School Board Association in Minsky, that was kind of the voice you didn't get a chance to hear from, was parents, and being given some information about the positive benefits of PSEO. We're very much supportive of the bill. Thank Representative Erdahl, and we'll look forward to continuing to work with him and others that have concerns. But I just wanted to point out that parents were the point of that amendment. And we thought they should have the information.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
And Representative Kim? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Representative Depke has a question.
I'm sorry. I want to ask a question of Mr. Bartholomew. So would you explain to me what we just did with this? Are you happy with this particular amendment, which is the 2025A6 amendment? Are you and the School Board Association happy with putting this back in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Depke, we're happy to continue working with School Board Association and Representative Erdahl and others to rectify the issues that amendment is getting at.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for the
clarification. Well, to be clear, we don't support the amendment, but we've appreciated the efforts of Representative Erdahl to find some ground that works for everyone.
Okay,
and we'll
thank
keep
you.
Doing that.
Mr. Nathan, sorry to keep you waiting.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Nathan. I work with educators, citizens, community groups throughout the state of Minnesota. I direct the Center for School Change at McAllister College, and I represent only the Center for School Change. And I asked Bondow Lee, with whom I work, a first-generation American, a first-generation high school and college graduate. There isn't time today to hear from Bondow in great length about why she thinks this is a good idea, why she has been on a variety of radio programs, why she's brought Spanish-speaking families information, the families that don't have good information from from high schools. We do not support the amendment. We have had in 8 different hearings, African American Leadership Forum, McGeezy Communications, Growth and Justice, the Minnesota Council on Gifted and Talented, all of them have testified in favor of allowing free speech for colleges and universities, of allowing colleges and universities to make information available to families. When this was proposed a quarter century ago, the same organizations opposed it. It has worked its way through. There has been 25 years of experience with it. You asked, and I'll be brief, you asked, why was this proposed? Because African American Leadership Forum, McGeezy Communications, Growth and Justice, the Star Tribune, the Pioneer Press, another group of newspapers all said it was a good idea to allow colleges and universities to help people understand the financial benefits. I see people shaking their heads. I understand, but we were told 25 years ago this was the worst piece of legislation that had been adopted in 25 years. 80% of the people in Minnesota say it's a good idea.
Thank you. Please identify yourself, and if you can be brief, it'd be real nice.
Okay. My name is Bandao Lee. I'm from the Center for School Change. I'm here representing myself and my experience through taking AP College in the Schools, and I just want to address a few of the things that was discussed earlier as far as counselor load. My work with working with the schools and the families, of which we all are here for, to represent the community. Let us not forget the communities like myself who have families who cannot speak the language. I know I heard the word of mouth is how PSEO is going about. That can't be the case, because obviously my parents don't know about these programs, and other families in the Latino, Somali, and those type of families, even a few of English speakers I've met throughout the time I've been at the center in the schools are frustrated because they're not getting the information they're asking for to get the benefits of PSEO and or all of the other programs. Yes, the counselor ratio to student is a big issue. At the same time, I've also met counselors who have asked me to provide them PSEO information. So that's the issue, if you think about it. It has to be a better way of us connecting higher ed to the counselors so they can better provide for their students. And that's an issue I want to address that I've worked with, and I'm a bit frustrated with when I see counselors asking me for help, and I'm not quite MDE, Minnesota Department of Education, or a college. So those are things I want to address. And then I just want to say I just came back from taking some students onto a college campus through a grant, and the students were told by Concordia University about PSEO. You better bet every one of those students really wanted to go to Concordia now, because they knew, and after our meeting, they said they wanted to come because they wanted to earn college credit early. And the reason why Concordia elaborated on PSEO earlier, just about 20 minutes or 30 minutes ago, was because I came in to talk about dual credits for the students to take advantage of these state programs in their high schools if offered, and then PSEO for all of those who are eligible. And I hope that we can expand it, because there are students out there who are ready to take these courses and would really benefit, like myself. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
One last 30-second point, sir. One of the things that has happened is that the legislative auditor surveyed more than 1,000 parents and teachers and school principals, and one of the things that the school principals said was that PSEO had the following effect. More than half of them said it. Increased communication between high school and college, increased collaboration between high school and college. So the point about what happens in college towns is a really good one. Having said that, we envision, based on 27 years of experience, that one of the things that will happen as there's more information is that there will be more collaboration between high schools and colleges, and we think that's a good thing. We think AP, IB, college and schools all have value.
Thank you very much. Representative Detmer, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 2025, as amended, be passed to the K-12 Education Finance.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say
Representative Verdol.
It's a simple little bill and a fine piece of legislation.
I should have asked you to, but
that's okay.
I assumed that. So, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill is passed on to K-12. Mm-hmm. And we are adjourned. Seriously.